What Happens When We Die? From Angel Studios, the force behind Sound of Freedom and The Chosen comes an unprecedented deep dive into the phenomena of near-death experiences in the new movie After Death. After Death makes a courageous venture into a hotly debated, mysterious subject by comparing near-death experience with cutting-edge scientific knowledge. Hear from experts in the fields of science, philosophy, and medicine, as well as firsthand experiences of people who have lived through death as they paint a fascinating picture of life in the next realm. This groundbreaking project responds to the soul's innate desire to find meaning in life and solace in the future. Come see it for yourself or pay it forward by providing a free ticket for others to see the film. Leave your preconceptions at the door and prepare for a never-before-seen glimpse into what the next life could entail in After Death, opening October 27th. Get your tickets today or pay it forward at angel.com/Dana. That's angel.com/Dana. After Death, the end is only the beginning. Rated PG-13.
Thank you, Craig. John, the president said that if Iran or its proxies attacked U.S. troops, that we would respond. What is he waiting for exactly?
He did say that.
Where's the response?
He said that. And he said that we will...
Repeating the warning is the response?
Jack, come on now.
It's not his question.
I'm not going to telegraph punches here from the podium. We have responded and retaliated in the past, quite aggressively, in fact, back in March. And as the president said, we will not hesitate to protect our troops and our facilities, but we're going to do it at a time of our choosing and a manner of our choosing. And the decision to do it, if we do it, is his as commander-in-chief and his alone.
He said that he issued a warning to the Ayatollah, this warning he talked about yesterday. How was that warning delivered?
I'm not going to get into that.
Can you say if there was a phone call or if there was a third party? Was there a message that was relayed after U.S. troops were injured?
There was a direct message relayed. That's as far as I'm going to go.
And then why were the injuries not disclosed until Tuesday?
I'd have to refer you to the Pentagon.
So that's John Kirby talking to Jackie Heinrich there. And this is as things are kicking off in actually near Tel Aviv. And then, of course, you have the ground offensive that looks like they're still softening some targets over there. Welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you, top of this first hour on Friday. You can listen to the nationally syndicated radio show Coast to Coast. And this latest, there have been explosions, things like that, as the IDF is preparing. They're softening the ground there, so to speak. That's just what you would normally do before any kind of ground invasion. So we're going to follow all of that, keep you up to date as well. And that's just, again, some of the latest. And the situation, like the latest with all of this, because there's been, we've got stories of rocket fire. Some of our assets have been targeted in and around Israel as well. It's just some of the pushback and the heat from Iran. And for instance, there have been, I'm pulling up a couple of things here, because there's been an increase in action. The shelling has been pretty crazy. But near that Israel-Gaza border, there's a lot of stuff happening. So we're gonna keep you up to date with all of that. I wanted to share with you, too, I thought this was interesting. A Hamas official, they were doing an interview with the UK, right? The UK press. So the Hamas official, Ghazi Hamad, was being interviewed. You know, he's trying, I guess, to do, it's just weird. Like, I guess it's just Hamas trying to do some kind of PR for their terror offensive. Like, how would you describe that, I guess, you know? So he was in a conversation with this British broadcaster, and he didn't like the way it was going. So he had a tantrum and stormed off. We have this, I believe. Listen to this. This is unbelievable.
You justify killing people as they sleep, you know, families. How do you justify killing hundreds of
people? I want to stop this interview.
I want to stop this interview. I want to stop it. I want to stop the interview now. Well, I don't get it. Why is he so? Because he was being asked some very difficult questions, is why. He was being asked some very difficult questions, and so he just didn't feel like answering anything. And he just said, he stormed out of the interview, the senior official. Sounds like he's not handling the heat too well, just got to say. sounds like he's just not. But he was asked like a legitimate question, you know, like what? And it was the BBC's Middle East correspondent. They were saying, look, you know, you have these that you have this international condemnation. You have these harsh, the brutal killings of over 1,400 Israelis. They're, I mean, mostly civilians. Because the whole point that what Hamas has been saying to everyone is that no. Our whole policy has only ever been to ever target IDF forces exclusively. That's what they've said over and over again. Well, clearly they didn't. I mean, you had the Hamas paragliders who came in and they were told. I mean, they were telling everybody. They were telling investigators. They're even telling the press that goes over to Gaza to interview them. Oh, yeah, we were totally targeting just everybody. We wanted to make it hurt as much as possible. That's what they were saying to people. So how are you going to sit here now and come around and say, no, it was only our policy to attack IDF? Well, clearly that's not what was happening. That's a false claim. And so they're saying, oh, no. The civilian deaths, that was the result. Hamas's argument is, no, they tried to confront our fighters, and that's what happened. They weren't planned in advance. We didn't plan to actually, paraglide into a peace rally or a peace concert and then start just shooting everyone like fish in a barrel from the sky. We didn't do it. How did those people confront the paragliders up in the air? I'm curious. Because that's what he was telling this guy. And he kept saying, he goes, no, there was no command to kill civilians. You know, there was just people were confronting. What? Like, what did the babies do to you? How did the babies confront Hamas fighters? Million questions here. Million questions. So he gets up. That didn't go well for him. And that was bad for Hamas because Hamas needs a PR pick-me-up. They need a PR campaign. This is, and as much as they're going to sit here and try, and they got the stupid college kids on their side. Have you seen some of this stuff, by the way, with some of the college kids? You have Jewish students at a New York City college that were targeted by pro-Hamas. We told you about the Cooper Union. Well, more's coming out about it. They had to pack a bunch of them into a library and lock them in there for quote-unquote their own safety. And they said that because there's all kinds of videos coming out about this now. And they were saying that you should go hide in the attic. That's what these protesters were telling these Jewish students who were there to speak. They were telling them, go hide in the attic. Go hide there. And then you have the Tree of Life, where we had that massacre. There was anti-Semitic graffiti on the anniversary of the Tree of Life massacre. The Squirrel Hill community, they woke up yesterday, the fifth anniversary, and over a sign that says, we stand with Israel, they were spray painting Gaza over it. And then there were some slurs that were spray painted on nearby buildings. Unbelievable. And this just keeps happening. Stanford students, they were demanding that the school fly them to Gaza so they can grieve properly. It is the Students for Justice for the Fictional Country Palestine at Stanford University. They sent a letter to the administration demanding that the school acknowledge and condemn Israel's ongoing siege on Gaza as an international war crime. See, it's only a war crime when Hamas is hit back. It's not a war crime when Hamas is doing it. It's not a war crime when Hamas is doing 50,000 things worse. So they said that they demanded, is in caps lock, 24/7 counseling by specialists in trauma-related material. They said that they wanted safe space and counseling, trauma-related mental support. What did they say? They wanted they expect a round-trip ticket to quote-unquote Palestine so they can grieve properly. That is what they want. So I'm amazed how they think that tuition dollars are supposed to pay for that. I mean, I guess you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. I don't know. I mean, they think that somehow they're owed this for what? For what purpose? Just unbelievable the amount of, and it's all these super fancy Ivy League schools. They are the most anti-Semitic garbage things possible out there. Absolutely. The other thing, too, is that they got backup. NYPD says that pro-Hamas protesters, remember, this was at Cooper Union. They were saying, no, 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 there was no threat. They were screaming slurs at them and threats at them, telling them to go hide in the attic. How was there no threat? How was there no threat? I'm curious about this. The videos that they have where they were trapped in the library, all of this stuff, that looks pretty damn threatening to me. That looks incredibly threatening. They responded, NYPD responded on Thursday morning in writing to a request for comment. Daily Signal asked them about it. And they said, no, quote, no threats of physical violence were made. Well, that's actually not, I can't even play for you some because it's F word this, F word that. I can't even play like some of it. And then there's some slurs that I don't know necessarily if they are, if you can ban them from air or if it's just not good to have on air. The slurs, some of the slurs that they were calling the Jewish students. But yet words are violence when it's the left. I mean, if you simply own a gun in America, you're considered a domestic terrorist. But oh my gosh, you can sit here and talk about how you're going to shove people in the oven at Cooper Union. And oh my goodness, that's totally fine. So they got backup. They're empowered. They're absolutely empowered. The latest with Maine, apparently this killer left a note somewhere. We're going to talk more about this. They're still looking for this guy. Yesterday, there was a lot of activity outside his mountain or his wooded cabin area, but he wasn't there. He wasn't there. And they don't know if him getting on the boat was like a false flag for police. They don't know if it was a false flag for police. They're not quite sure exactly, but they're still looking for him. They don't know if he's gone over the border. They just don't know. So they're trying to look for him. They're trying to find him because he's obviously in the middle of a major mental health crisis here and he's running around. But yeah, I mean, they were all out there yesterday. I was just wondering how, I mean, because, you know, he's got night optics, but they have heat seeking stuff too. I was imagining, you know, is it possible that they were able to use some of their tech to determine whether or not he was there? They still have no clue. I'm trying to figure out how a guy like that can get away so quickly. Go to three separate places. We're going to discuss that. We're also going to talk about the red and yellow flags and the big discussion over mental health. We'll have that conversation. We also have Today in Stupid. If you had to guess which political candidate was arguing that universities that don't subsidize pro-Hamas speech for student visa holders who are not citizens is anti-speech, who would you guess? We'll discuss that as well. So we got a lot of stuff to hit today in the program. We'll take you through it all. Hi, folks. This is Dana Lash for the Headrest Safe, a pioneering innovation in automotive security. The Headrest Safe company embarked on this journey in 2022, revolutionizing vehicle safety. It all started with a father's concern after the birth of his daughter and the dissatisfaction with his own truck's gun box, which ignited the creation of the Headrest Safe. But it's not just for firearms. It provides invisible security for all of your valuables. The Headrest Safe is strategically placed on the passenger side headrest facing the driver, and accessing your items is a breeze, with a magnetic door opening in just 2.5 to 3.5 seconds. Seamless integration into your vehicle's interior is remarkable. I've witnessed it myself, and it blends in seamlessly. The Headrest Safe caters to anyone seeking secure and accessible in-vehicle storage. Experience this innovation at headrestsafe.com and use code Dana for an exclusive $50 off. That's headrestsafe.com, code Dana for $50 off. The Headrest Safe, transforming the way we protect our valuables and vehicles with a 100% money-back guarantee.
Are we in a cardboard conundrum? The cardboard industry is entering a recession. Yes, those things your Christmas presents come in. What does that say about the consumer who buys things in those boxes? Economists say we have a rising GDP, but is that accurate? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Widespread looting breaks out in Acapulco after Mexico's worst ever hurricane has devastated the beach resort city and killed at least two people. Hurricane Otis which hit land as a Cat 5, has left 27 people dead. Survivors are linking the Mexican government's unsurprisingly slow response to an interest in restoring the city's infrastructure for its booming tourism industry. It destroyed 80% of the city's hotels. Footage has been showing people stealing electronic goods and homeware appliances, even though there's literally no power to run them. But hey, priority. So that's wild. You thought they'd be maybe better prepared. I mean, it's a huge resort town. You'd think they'd want to make money and prepare and, you know, shore up their stuff. Amazon's profit. The sales are showing resilience leading into the holidays because they provide a service. I'm not going to get mad at them for making money. I am going to get mad at them because I'm jealous that I did not think of this idea first, although I was like a baby when he started, but still, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, why didn't we go back in time and start doing stuff out of our garages, Kane? So auto execs are coming clean. EVs aren't working. I keep seeing all kinds of stuff about this. The sales are horrible. They're not working. Auto executives, they're saying that the demand has been super slow. They're pulling back on EV targets. Mercedes-Benz CFO said this is a pretty brutal space. So for all the people who are repeatedly telling me that this is the future of automotive, it's not. They said that they have growing inventory and almost no sales. So they said their ambitious EV plans are all in jeopardy. Oh, listen to this. You guys hear this? Tiniest violin in the world right here. Playing just for them. That's what you get when you go woke. You actually go broke. It's not just a saying. It's a reality. It's a prophecy. Goldie Hawn says an alien touched her and it felt like the finger of God. I love Goldie Hawn. And I love Kurt Russell. I just thought this was funny. She said that she had asked aliens to visit her and she says they did. Well, because she seems chill, you know, that's why. I mean, she doesn't seem like some of these other people out there. If I was an alien and I had to choose who I was going to visit on Earth, you know, she might be on the list because she seems chill. You know, if you're trying to do some recon and you're observing the human race or the human species to see, you know, what it's all about. She seems pretty chill, non-threatening, not crazy. She's not, you know, bitching about people on pancake syrup. I mean, just saying. So that, you know, that makes sense. I get that. I think I can roll with that one. Let's see, UFC Chief Dana White, he's mad and hitting back at the people who are mad over the sponsorship deal with Bud Light. Now, we talked about this in the discussion of redemption. He says they were the original sponsors. They chose to, they can make that business decision. I'm just saying it would have gone a long way if Bud Light, because like people wouldn't be reconciled. If Bud Light even now came out and said, you know what, we totally messed. Even if they now did, I think people would be like, you know what, that's cool. All right. And they go along with it. You know, I get that. And they fired, I get it. They fired the ad exec that was behind it and all of that. You got a lot of ladies out there that y'all made mad though. So I'm just saying, apologies go a long way. You can't have reconciliation without acknowledgement of wrongdoing. We got a lot more on the way. Stick with us.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
I don't think there's a way forward in that because it's politically divided down the party as to who supports that. 56% support maybe a ban. The other half don't. It's very politicized. Mm-hmm. So if no one's going to budge on that, I would concede other things we can control. The new House Speaker spoke to mental health, and the right often goes to mental health on this. There's no actionable steps to fix the epidemic in this country on mental health, mm-hmm. but we can keep guns out of their hands. This shooter in Massachusetts had been flagged to the law enforcement by his family. Right. He'd been institutionalized for telling people he was going to go shoot at a reserve base. When someone tells you what they're going to do, believe them. Every mass shooter we've had has left steps along the way.
Yeah.
I believe in red flag laws, and most of the country does.
No,
we
don't.
Believe in background checks.
Did they have
the minimum age?
Yellow flag.
But it was designed by a pro-gun organization, and the yellow flag law insists that you see a doctor. That creates a bigger impediment to actually getting someone flagged.
Sarah Haynes is clueless AF. First off, that's not what Maine's yellow flag entirely does. I'm trying to be really cool about this, but when I hear stupid people sit here and just blow smoke out of their ass and then act as though that they have the authority or should be taken seriously when they're discussing dissecting our rights, I get pretty belligerent. And I'm a brawler by nature. I mean, blame the Irish part of me. It's my culture, not a costume. But I just don't take too kindly to stupid people saying stupid things about an issue that is incredibly important. And if they cared enough about it as they claim to, then they would know what they're talking about. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. So this was, what chick was this on The View? One of them. She's not, I was going to say she's not the brightest tool in the shed, but really that kind of describes all of them. She was saying Sarah, whatever her name is, like the underwear. Okay. She was saying that first off, let me explain the difference between New York's red flag and Maine's yellow flag. So there are 21 states across the country that have what they call, quote unquote, red flag laws. I am dramatically, emphatically not a fan of red flag laws. It was one of my biggest beefs with the last administration. Interestingly enough, there was an interview, although he's talked about it on our show. Candidate in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis, said he would absolutely not sign any kind of red flag law. He would fight against it as president, which I'm very glad to see, because not every Republican is strong or knowledgeable on that. So the difference between what Maine has and what New York has, Maine has a quasi, I go ahead and say it's a red flag law. They call it a yellow flag law because they're trying to make it look less offensive because it is a big hunting state. They may be kind of left, kind of purpley, but you know, they do have Susan Collins, who is a Republican. She's a very moderate Republican, but that kind of speaks to the voter makeup of Maine. However, they don't want their 2A rights compromised. So they, in order to appease the moderates and some people who are not so moderate in Maine, they came up with a yellow flag, and they thought by calling it yellow instead of red that makes you think that it's less of an encroachment on your rights. Now, there are different approaches that Maine has to the whole flag law that other states are a little bit more ridiculous about. Some states, when you talk about evidentiary standard, you know, you have reasonable doubt, clear and convincing evidence. There are a lot of states that just have basic suspicion, which makes the error rate and the overturning and the problems with this so incredibly ridiculous. Maine has, I believe that what they have is reasonable doubt. And also from the very beginning, they're, I think, one of like the only state in the country that actually insists if you're going to talk about removing someone or treating someone as a potential suspect and having their property removed, they want to have a mental health professional involved in the first step. And let's just pause here for a moment, because is that not what it's all about in the first place? You have all these people who talk about red flag laws, and they say that it's because they want a quick way to respond to someone who they believe is a danger to themselves or others. But yet that the solution in the red flag law betrays that claim, because all it does is remove property. And it only removes one specific type of property. And there is no agreement of treatment, ongoing treatment, nothing like that. I give the example of the guy in California a couple of years ago who had a red flag law, and California was the first state to pass it. They have the strictest gun laws in the nation, followed second to New York. But the guy, after they enacted a red flag law, and these are all ex parte processes, meaning one side, so the respondent has no idea this is happening until they get a knock on their door usually. And sometimes it's in the middle of the night. There's a guy in Maryland who lost his life over that. But in California, this guy, you know, when police showed up, they had petitioned the court to have a red flag order invoked on him. And they took his guns, left him there, and then he stabbed his mom to death like a couple of days later. So all it is about confiscating property. If it was about mental health or preventing someone who's a danger to themselves or others, then there would be wrapped up in it some kind of treatment. Not to say protections of due process, which brings me to my second point on this. If someone is dangerous enough to abridge their natural right, then by God, you better have the evidence to lock them up. We are a republic, and we are very, very unique in this world. We have natural rights and we have due process, and you cannot trade due process for the specter of security. It's not going to happen. So in Maine, their yellow flag law, what does make it a little different is that from the beginning, usually in New York, every Tom, Dick, and Harry can petition the court and have a judge make the determination as to whether or not they think you're dangerous enough to have your property removed. I mean, in New York, you can have your coworker, you can have exes, like literally anybody can report you. In Florida's law, which was introduced and signed before DeSantis was even in office there, and they're making their Florida state legislature more and more conservative by the bit. There are still some holdouts in there, which is why they can't get it overturned. But believe me, that's a priority for a lot of conservatives in the state legislature there. But they have a high error rate as well. Dave Koppel had talked about this when he was testifying before Congress a few years back, because the more people that you have that can report for, you know, a wide set of circumstances, the less oversight you have and the higher the error rate you may have. So in New York, anybody can report. In Maine, it's only law enforcement that can petition. And in the very beginning, and I still don't like it, but in the very beginning, you have a health professional involved. So a health professional is involved from step one, and then they evaluate to see whether or not someone is a danger to themselves or others. Then they take that recommendation to the judge, and then based on that recommendation, that individual has X amount of time to turn over their firearms, at which point, if they do not, then police come and seize them. Whereas, you know, you petition the court, and then confiscation can happen immediately if they're not transferred to a third party, like a trusted friend or family member. So there's some, and the reason I don't like it is because it still is a runaround of due process. Again, I go back to, if someone is dangerous enough to remove from them a natural right, they are dangerous enough to lock them up. You can't, if they're dangerous enough to have their natural rights abridged, then they are dangerous enough to lock up. You must go through the process. We err on the side of freedom, which is why we also make sure that people are able to be their own first responders, because the average response time for law enforcement is anywhere from 19 to 20 minutes, and that's from 2021 figures. So this is all incredibly important to know, because this all factors into this stupid comment that Sarah Haynes said on The View. So she's talking about mental health and all of this other stuff and red flag law, which brings me to the question. This guy, this murderer, he was institutionalized in New York. And I want to point out that this was not like a 2-day hold. In some states have some discretion here. You maybe get like, what, 24 to 48 hours for a hold, like a 5150 in California or something to that, or in Florida, something to that effect. And then at that point, you cannot hold them anymore without probable cause or without proper cause. You have to have a judge involved. This was 2 weeks. So that was a hell of a lot longer than a regular emergency evaluation to immediately deduce whether or not someone was a danger to themselves or others. This guy was institutionalized for 2 weeks. They say he was committed, not admitted, which sounds like it was involuntary. So that immediately, under 18 USC 922 subsection G subsection 4, that immediately makes him a prohibited possessor. He would have to go to court, go through a restorative hearing, and have those rights restored, have them overturned, or, you know, end up being convicted and just be or end up having that upheld and being a prohibited possessor after that. So he was in New York when this happened. When you are, here's the process in New York, because New York also has the SAFE Act, and the Bruin case only undid certain aspects of New York gun law that was related to the Sullivan case, etc. That's a separate issue. SAFE Act, what it requires is that if someone is calling in mental health professionals, or if someone is trying to have someone institutionalized, you have to report that to the Division of Criminal Justice Services. And then what they do is they go to the judge, and then they pull the permit. They pull and see if you have a permit, and then they seize your firearms. This is a requirement under law. It's not a feature. It's a requirement of the system. So I have did that happen? Because if they held him for 2 weeks in New York on that, how was that not done? That's a requirement. And I've heard some people say, well, maybe it was because he was in the Army Reserve. They all go by the same damn laws as everyone else does. That is why back in Sutherland Springs, the Air Force had to settle with all these families, because they failed to report that guy's domestic violence conviction to the National Crime Information Center, as is required by federal law. Their military branches are not exempt from this. But see, that's the thing. There's no incentive for reporting. And I've said before, you can have an argument over whether or not you think the background check system is unconstitutional or faulty, which I'm you know, we probably agree. We'll have a separate discussion about that. But the issue is that when you don't have a requirement to report, or there's no penalty for non-reporting unless it's litigated and there's a settlement, this is what ends up happening. So what happened in this case? Furthermore, if someone is held for 2 weeks like that, there is an adjudication process for their release. Was this guy adjudicated, and the legal term is mentally defective? Was he adjudicated a mental defective? What were the terms of his release? In Virginia Tech, that murderer, which is one of the worst mass casualty incidents in the history of the United States, and it was done with two Glocks and not a rifle, that individual had to go through a process to be released. And one of the requirements, one of the conditions for his release is ongoing mental health care. And he did not regularly meet with his doctor. He fell through the cracks. So the people who were assigned to spot warning signs did not. So what were the conditions for this guy's release? That's a huge question that nobody wants to talk about because they're too damn busy bitching and moaning about an inanimate object that's responsible for the fewest crimes in America annually. That's responsible for the fewest fatalities under literal hands, feet, and fists. That's not a joke. FBI, every year, the latest data available is 2021. Their UCR, stand for Uniform Crime Report. They're on the, publicly on this thing called the internet. People can go. They've got a brand new interface. It works seamlessly. Very easy to look stuff up. You can look at it by county. You can look at it by however you want to. But what it shows is that these rifles that everybody's talking about banning are responsible for the fewest homicides annually. So this brings us to Maine. So Maine, did New York let Maine know? Because the guy was apparently domiciled in Maine. He resided in Maine. He did his reserve work in New York, goes back to Maine. Were they made aware? Again, that goes back to, you got to find out, was there a process? Was he adjudicated mentally unfit? Is he a prohibited possessor? I find it weird that no one in law enforcement is telling us this. I'm sorry, but that's BS. That is absolute BS. That's the very least you should be doing is telling us this. That's not a HIPAA violation. That's public information. Was this guy a prohibited possessor? Super damn easy to answer. Yes or no. Don't sit here and say that it's a HIPAA, that's a HIPAA violation, but then freely tell everybody, you literally put it out in a damn bolo, that he was hearing voices. So which is it? Is it a HIPAA violation or not? Be honest with this information. When people are not forthright, they're covering their asses. If you don't want me to assume that of you, and I really would hate to assume that of anyone who wears a badge, then be forthright, because I'm immediately suspicious of any governing entity. And that includes even my friends who wear the badge. God love you, but I do. I'm just an American through and through. So I got a lot of questions. So coming up, let's look at the whole situation with Maine. The other thing is, did he obtain his firearm legally? I don't know if you've seen some of the pictures of him running around. The rifle that he has shown holding in the CCTV footage is illegal in New York. So he couldn't have gotten that in New York because it had a detachable magazine. You can't buy that in New York unless you're doing it on the black market, meaning it's illegal because you can't have that feature on a rifle in New York because of New York Safe Act. So he either had it before this happened, and then if he had it before it happened and he was institutionalized, they didn't follow Safe Act and seize his guns as per the law. So you see what I'm saying here? There is a lot of questions because somebody dropped the ball somewhere. There's no matter which way you slice it, somebody messed up. What happens when we die? From Angel Studios, the force behind Sound of Freedom and The Chosen comes an unprecedented deep dive into the phenomena of near-death experiences in the new movie After Death. After Death makes a courageous venture into a hotly debated, mysterious subject by comparing near-death experience with cutting-edge scientific knowledge. Hear from experts in the fields of science, philosophy, and medicine, as well as firsthand experiences of people who have lived through death, as they paint a fascinating picture of life in the next realm. This groundbreaking project responds to the soul's innate desire to find meaning in life and solace in the future. Come see it for yourself or pay it forward by providing a free ticket for others to see the film. Leave your preconceptions at the door and prepare for a never-before-seen glimpse into what the next life could entail in After Death, opening October 27th. Get your tickets today or pay it forward at angel.com/Dana. That's angel.com/Dana. After Death. The end is only the beginning. Rated PG-13.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I
I would love to see an assault weapons ban. Like President Reagan, I don't believe they're a sport or hunting instrument. It's like shooting fish in a bucket, but that's my
But also, if you shoot with an AR-15, let's say you shoot it's a deer, you can't eat it.
Oh, my gosh.
Because you basically demolish
it. Oh, my gosh. Help me.
An actual difficult problem.
Oh, sweet Jesus, please put a hand over my mouth because I am being tested here. Oh, in your name I pray, amen. She said that. Do you realize that some states don't even allow you to use that caliber to hunt with because it's not powerful enough and it causes undue suffering to the animal that you're hunting? What do they think it does? I have to read this tweet. This is funny. Somebody who's listening to the show, they go, hey, I once had to clear out a dead oak tree, so instead of using a backhoe, I shot it once with my AR-15. It not only disintegrated the tree, but it took out three trees behind it and a gremlin in my neighbor's driveway. Whenever they want to demolish a building, they just shoot at it with one AR-15. It's all it takes. Blows up the whole building, leaves a crater there. You can't eat. Who believes, first off, that Joy Behar has ever eaten deer?
I don't.
Okay. Who believes that Joy Behar knows anything about hunting?
No, I don't.
I mean, you know, you can't eat it.
It's disintegrated.
If Charlie Day had a drunk aunt, it's her. Well, I mean, I'm an expert of bird law. Oh, my gosh. But he actually was an expert of bird. whereas, shockingly, she knows nothing. Again, it's like me talking about football whenever she talks about guns. Ask me a football question, Kane. Let's just do a demonstration.
All right. Let's see. Who is the person who gets the ball handed to them as they try to get across the line?
Didn't you ask me this before?
Nope, not this one.
Is this the Hutter?
It's not the Hutter. That's the center. The last. Is that the
guy who's like Hut?
The guy that hikes it to the quarterback? No, I'm talking about the person that gets the ball handed to them by the quarterback and runs
the taker?
For yards. The taker.
The receiver?
No.
I know that's a thing. The taker. There.
No.
The ball thrower.
Running back.
The Jimmy Russeller. Running back. That's like not even a real... Okay. But that's like what Joy Behar talking about guns sounds like to me. Now you guys understand. Second hour on the way.
In our country today, the leading cause of death of American children is gun violence.
Oh my gosh, I'm not going to get through this, am I?
Gun violence.
I'm burdened by what is.
Has terrorized and traumatized so many of our communities in this country. And let us be clear, it does not have to be this way.
As
our friends in Australia have demonstrated.
Oh, she mentioned Australia. Oh, please do mention Australia. Interesting fact, as Kane noted, they got herded into COVID camps. Yeah, for clot shot fun. And also, aside from that, though, their ownership now is back towards pre-confiscation levels, and surveys that their own government kind of was sliding under the rug there showed it didn't have any impact on their violent crime. But so that renders her point entirely stupid and irrelevant. And this also is in Australia. Welcome back to the show. Top of the second hour. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the radio program. You can watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. What she had mentioned, I'm so tired of this being misrepresented, and I'm only going to address this one time, this particular show, in that it is not the number one killer of kids. They lie to you, and they think you're stupid, and they inflate their numbers. That's exactly what they do. So here's how they measure it, and it's so specious. They count kids 18 and up, and they include individuals who are in possession of handguns illegally that are running around gangbanging and selling drugs. If you take that number away, and by the way, it is so easy to get a lot of this data with some of the resources I've told you already, UCR reports, etc. When you subtract the 18 and up and the gang violence, literally you can look and you can subtract that. You can see who has been involved in gang violence, if it was used in the commission of felonious drug activity. When you remove those numbers, that statistic drops. It plummets. Automobiles, drugs, drowning actually is like the number one. Drowning in automobile accidents, drugs, all of that outranks it. So what they include are young adults gangbanging and selling drugs, and they incorporate that in to inflate that number. You would be surprised. I know the left hates when you bring up Chicago and they try to make that irrelevant because they're like, don't you have any other excuses, any other examples? But it's cities like Chicago and even in St. Louis and Houston and Los Angeles and, you know, elsewhere, Philly, where you have young adults running around involved in gang and drug activity. That's what inflates the number. And so just in the same way that they try to say that when they try to talk about gun homicide and they try to inflate that number with suicides, it's the same thing. They're lying to you. You know, I said this on Jesse Waters' show last night, and we've talked about it here on this radio program, but I'm going to revisit it really quickly because one of the things that I mentioned, it shocked him, and this was one of the biggest stories a year ago, is the it's the story of how the CDC, when it concerns these numbers, they actually colluded with gun control activists, the gun control lobby, to hide defensive gun usages. So the point that I made to Jesse Waters last night is I don't really care if she wants to cite Australia or whatever, but do not come to the debate of illegally used firearms that take lives without also arguing with it the number of legally possessed firearms that save lives. And as many people want to disbelieve these, I mean, they have pored over these studies, as many people as you can disbelieve it or not, but it's the truth. Defensive gun usage just outpaces criminal usage like 3-1. It's crazy. Now, one of the reasons why there's a little bit of a wide discrepancy, whether it's like 50,000 annually or up to 2 million annually, is because different areas count defensive gun usage differently. John Lott did a study wherein some areas you have to squeeze the trigger in order for that to even be put into record. So that's one of the reasons why there's such a discrepancy with that. Now, that number, the first person to arrive at that number was Gary Kleck. I've interviewed him before. He's a criminal researcher down in Florida and a lifelong Democrat, still a lifelong Democrat, by the way. I don't know, man. I just don't even ask that. But he's a logic guy and a science guy. And he's like, there's no way that you can argue this on defensive gun usage. He's like, the innocent law-abiding usage vastly outpaces that of criminal usage. So you cannot have a discussion about illegally used firearms that are used to take lives and then want to omit everything from this discussion just so that you can use this as justification for gun confiscation and then think that you get to set the rules of debate and exclude defensive gun usage by law-abiding people who are using it to defend themselves and defend their families, right? It's asinine. Like the situation with AR-15s. People want to go after AR-15, which is one of the most misunderstood rifles in existence. It's one of the reasons why I specifically chose it and fought for it as my book cover for the first book I did, Hands Off My Gun. I got into a knockdown dragout with my publisher over that because they wanted to put me with a stupid, I think I was going to sit there. I don't know if I can't remember if I had a SIG or a Glock or what it was. Not that it was stupid, but I was sitting in a chair holding a handgun and I just felt like it was a Harlequin kind of cover. I'm like, I don't want this. This looks like something that's going to be on a book cover in Schnucks in our hometown of St. Louis, which is a supermarket or a Kroger or something. I'm not doing this. I was like, I'm not going to promote this book or do anything if I don't have this cover. So that's pick that for the cover. But the AR-15, you know, people talk about it being used in mass casualty incidents, but do you know how often it's used in defensive gun usages? I mean, to say nothing of one of the worst mass casualties in American history being stopped by my friend Stephen Williford, who went and grabbed his own custom-built AR-15. Or what about the pregnant mom who used her AR-15 to fend off a home invasion after they attacked her husband, and she was pregnant and had 4 kids, and she was able to defend herself? Or what about the Jewish family that just defend themselves with the AR-15 in California? I mean, I could sit here and go on and on and on. It's an easy gun for women to use. Women really like it. Dudes can like it too, but there's a reason why it's super popular with women. And it's easy for them to handle and clear. And it's denigrated by people who don't know any better. So, you know, this comment, you know, from Kamala Harris sitting here talking about, well, Australia and all this stuff, and we have to have an assault weapons ban. The first assault weapons ban didn't even work. It had no impact on violent crime. It had no impact on mass casualty incidents, which still kept happening even under the assault weapons ban. And furthermore, some of the last biggest mass casualty incidents in California took place after they already banned assault weapons. Same thing in New York. If you look at the rifle that the guy, that the main killer is holding, that gun's illegal in New York. You can't have that gun in New York because you have scary attachments that are affixed onto it. And that includes a detachable magazine, which is so stupid. But, you know, I digress. So this is just, it's just an asinine soundbite. I mean, she's praising their gun confiscation. I just think that that's an anti-American. It is. It's a completely anti-American thing. There was a really great piece. Let me pull this up. I sent this out to you in prep. And at first, when I read the headline, I was like, yeah, I actually disagree with that because I think owning guns make you more safe. And I cite the defense of gun usage right there. But I thought this was a great piece. It's done by Timothy Hassau, and it was published over at The Federalist. And I like the argument that he makes because he said that people are all arguing this incorrectly. He says that what the way of thinking about the gun debate is fundamentally mistaken. He says what matters is not the risk or lack thereof that guns pose to society, but simply whether or not guns are a reasonable means of self-defense. He adds, this isn't to say that empirical findings aren't important, but rather that studies detailing the positive or negative effects of gun ownership or right to carry laws aren't relevant to what's at stake in the gun debate. He says, consider this. Your right to life isn't dependent on whether respecting your life would yield the best set of consequences. It is absolute and unrelenting, even if it would be more beneficial to others if your right were violated. He says, it would be wrong for me to override your right to life in order to harvest your organs to save five people, even if in doing so, I produce a more beneficial outcome. Your life has basic dignity that cannot be defeated in the name of a social utility. It isn't dependent on the outcome of a cost-benefit analysis, and the same goes for other rights that are derived from the right to life. So, for example, it would be wrong to rape someone even if doing so would save 10 lives. Rights function as moral trump cards that override appeals to utility. He says, we can think of the right of self-defense in similar terms. Since our right to self cannot be overridden in the name of social utility, and since the goal of self-defense is to protect one's life, it stands to reason that our right to self-defense can also not be overridden in the name of social utility. Like our right to life, our right to defend ourselves is a basic dignity that cannot be defeated just because it might produce a net benefit. We do not run a cost-benefit analysis before we allow individuals to defend themselves. So if you have a right to self-defense, you also have a right to the means of that defense. And that means you have the right to bear arms and the right to life and the right to self-defense from which it is derived. The right to bear arms is not subject to a cost-benefit analysis. And the goal of bearing arms is to facilitate effective self-defense. So then the question is, what falls under this right is whether it qualifies as a reasonable means of self-defense. And yes, it does. I sent this out to you if you get prep for Substack, because it's true. And that's what they want to subject you to. And that is un-American. Now, some of the other things that we are watching here, some of the latest as well, they're still doing this manhunt. This person, they haven't said what's in this letter, and I'm wondering if it's going to go to the way of that Nashville, the trans activist killer. Apparently, he left a note. I'm telling you, I'm really, really curious as to what that note says, but apparently he left one, and they're still searching for him. They're still trying to figure out what's, Now, also, the latest with Hamas's attack on Israel as well. The ground softening, I guess you could say, has increased.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, Brazil scientists are developing a new vaccine for cocaine addiction. It's called Stop Snorting Blanking Cocaine, You Dumbasses. It's a great name for it. That's not the technical name, but that's like what they're going to call it, I think, in marketing. It's called Calix Coca. It's the I need a vaccine to stop being stupid. Okay, here it is. It's a punch in the throat. It's super affordable. Really, you gotta have a vaccine to stop. I just can't even deal with this. So they're saying that Gen Z's anti-sex crusade is gonna kill good movies and TV. And they did this study. They say they're buzzkills. 51% of respondents aged 10 to 24, instead of they want movies and TV shows about, not about the romance. Like they don't like the. I've never seen Harry Met Sally. When Harry Met Sally. So is that like a. Is that a tawdry movie?
No, it's not tawdry or anything. It's just a romantic movie.
Yeah, okay. So and they were joking, instead of Love Actually, it's Like Actually. Or it's maybe just because everything new is blows. I mean, there's also that, you know? I mean, just think that there's a lot of stuff out there that's just not good anymore. Also, let's see here. Pull this up. The, I don't know why they changed this. Why did they change the name? So this hotel, they called it the Hotel Chalet. And it was the Chattanooga Choo Choo Lodgings. They refurbished it. That's a pretty big name change. Right. It's in, it was in Chicago. Why did they change that name? Why do I care? I don't care. Nor do you. By the way, it's feelings run high over candy corn. People who are wrong hate candy corn. People who love America and are not communists and have amazing taste, they love candy corn. It's totally fair. It is a perfect Halloween treat. And apparently the Associated Press says that there's a big debate over it. And it's just there's people who are wrong and then people who are completely 1,000% correct and holy.
I don't feel I'm wrong about it.
Oh, you don't. Wait, I'm sorry.
I don't like candy
corn. You literally drink dirty water that you call bacteria tea, but you won't eat delicious candy
corn. Yes, I won't eat wax as candy and pretend it's candy.
It's delicious. No, it's a delicious confection.
Freaking wax.
It is a delicious fall confection, sir. But you'll literally drink bacteria and tea.
Yes.
Your tea tea.
Your body needs bacteria.
Your body also needs candy corn. It does too. It's a food group. I have some right now. You know what?
Wax
you know
is
what?
Not a food group.
It is not wax. It is a delicious confection, sir. Stop with your propaganda. Next, you're going to tell me you like Hamas. My gosh. We're going there.
That escalated quickly.
It did. Oh, by the way, a garbage collector died because he got shot from a gun in a bag. It's not the best. Is it hunters? Was it hunters? Was it in? Just wondering. Stick with us. We got more in store.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And you're standing by your word that you did not have any intention to slow things. I mean, Democrats were trying to stall this vote on the House floor.
Yeah, hell no. I mean, when I ran into the Capitol, I went to go vote. And someone told me go downstairs, there's a meeting. So I didn't even know that meeting was taking place for the motion to I forgot what the vote was, but yeah. So no, absolutely not.
By the way, so that's Jamal Bowman. And he apparently got charged finally with pulling that fire alarm. I don't know if y'all saw the video of it. But the man literally goes to the door, takes off the warning signs. Rips him off and then pulls the alarm.
Doesn't test the door.
Yeah, he didn't press the door. He took off them. That's exactly what one would do, Kane. Juan showing everyone on the simulcast. When you're trying to figure out how to get out of a building and there's doors right there that you can. He knows. He knows. And he pulled the fire alarm.
The thing is, these are warning signs for people in case of a fire or in emergencies. And he's ripping them down and pulling the fire alarm.
Mm-hmm.
Yet misdemeanor.
He gets a misdemeanor, which he's going to have expunged. He already said that. He's going to have that. He said he's going to have that expunged. So, they're
different.
Yeah, it is. It's, you're right. It is super D different. He's has to pay a $1,000 fine, write a letter to apology or an apology. You knew everybody was lying on this. He was literally trying to obstruct. He was an insurrectionist. Oh my gosh, the insurrectionism. That's what I was told. He was attempting, a lot of the people who were charged for J6, the charges that they got were from disrupting or trying to disrupt or obstruct a congressional proceeding. And I don't think that, I mean, this seems like, there are people who are behind bars because they got hit with those exact same charges. He needs to go to jail because he tried to overthrow the government. It's the same thing. He might as well go ahead and put that bullhead thing on that one guy was wearing. Might as well. So, again, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. If you check out the Dana Show radio account on X or Twitter, we have a very scientific poll up right now. It's probably one of the most scientific undertakings.
No, I'd have to agree. Ever. Have you seen the update on the poll?
No, I'm sure that you probably got your bot army to cheat. I'm positive. So here's the question, and it's a complete, I mean, it's really a really well-balanced poll. If ever there was one, this one is. And the questions are thus, candy corn is, your two options include, one, a delicious confection, and two, hated by communists. Those are your options. Steve wanted to discount it when there were just 6 votes minutes ago. And we were winning by, the delicious confection was winning by 80-something percent. Kane has probably already voted with all. You did. I know you have a ghost account.
I have voted.
I know you have a ghost account. Totally voted with that ghost account.
No, I voted one time.
You are such a liar, dude. With your ghost account.
You literally put this up like, I don't know, a few minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
There's what, 60 votes now? And hated by communists is winning now.
Well, because communists hate candy corn. There are no wrong answers.
That is not what you meant.
Uh-huh.
No, it isn't. You know that I hate candy corn, so you're trying to call me a communist. That's what you were doing.
They do hate it.
That's what you were doing.
Communists, there are communists that hate candy corn.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
That is probably true.
Just saying.
But there are patriots that hate candy corn.
I don't know any patriot that hates candy corn.
You not know me?
Huh?
You don't know?
Oh, do you hate candy corn?
Yes, I hate it.
Oh, would you stop? Sorry about your communism.
You can tell it's Friday.
It is one of the most, I will literally go down in a blaze of glory on this. It is a delicious confection.
Uh-oh, 50-50 now.
It is, what did you say it looks like someone's snaggletooth? Who's voting on this? Like, what is wrong with people?
It looks like wax. It is not wax.
Yes,
when I was a kid, look.
It is joy that is in the shape of God knows what.
As you scream
delicious.
With anger. It's joy!
It's corn. It's supposed to look like corn.
Listen, when I was a kid, I loved candy corn. But
sure.
Whatever they're doing on however they're making candy corn nowadays, I'm not a fan of it.
What candy corn are you getting?
The whatever, Brock's. I'm not sure what the brand is. I've tried different brands of candy corn. None of them are good.
It's all delicious. No. There's no bad, unless it's even like the old candy corn that you find.
No, I don't know.
And you try to eat and it breaks your teeth off. Still kind of good.
What? No. No.
I'm not saying that I've done that, but, you know, I may have. Maybe.
Yeah, and your push pull.
It's not a push pull. It's a regular scientific pull.
Your push pull is definitely now. Now you're winning.
I'm dropping candy all over the place. Whose teeth look like this?
What?
Whose teeth look like this?
It's all yellow there in the bottom and orange with that's like the inflamed gum. And then white is the tooth root.
The tooth root?
Tooth root, gum, and then yellow. So, yeah.
So this is what you would call a food
tooth.
No,
you got it upside down.
Uh-uh.
No, you got the white is the root of the tooth. So it would
I'm
be
eating it.
The yellow part
I'm
is the
death. I don't know, because it's delicious.
The yellow part and the inflamed gum of it.
Even Juan likes candy corn. Everybody here, except for you, likes
all right,
candy
corn. What kind of, what brand is that?
I don't know.
I'll try it right now.
You want to have some?
Just
go up here and get some.
Throw me one.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
What? Are you trying to take my head off?
Just oh my gosh, who can't catch? We're going to have, this is how you get ants. This is how you get ants.
Just, okay.
Oh, eat it. Try it. Oh man, so good. Mmm. I could eat this all day.
Oh God, it's so sweet.
It's like your diabetes. Gosh. All the sugar in the world is here in my hand.
This one's a little more vanilla-y than waxy, the ones I get. So it's,
oh, it's so good. You guys want me to throw candy corn at you, too? I mean,
it's all right.
You guys want me to throw candy corn at you?
I don't prefer that.
Like beads at Mardi Gras?
No. Just, no. No. No.
Oh, man.
That's how you get ants.
Stick it to the roof of your mouth. No, and instead on the back of your teeth, it's good. It's like a treat just that just keeps on giving.
No. I don't know. That's too sweet. I can't even believe one eats that.
So. You know what candy is horrible, though? The Tootsie Roll.
What? I used to love the Tootsie Roll.
You want to talk about wax? It's it looks like a robot turd.
It does.
Looks like a chocolate candle.
And they're never not stale.
Yeah, chocolate candle.
They're never not stale. Have you tried to eat them? They're horrible.
Yeah, I've had one fresh Tootsie Roll in my life. The rest,
yeah, I think I have had
the rest have been a risk to my dental work.
And I chew it and I'm like, this is how it should have been. And then you never get it again. It's amazing. I just, you know, I say that all I'm telling you is this. I totally have a system, like with trick or treaters. I'd be like, oh, does your mom or dad, do they have a CHL? Go ask them. And then I, you know, make visible the king size candy bar. And, you know, you dress up that basket. That's like, you know, for your A-listers. You got your king size candy, you know, you got your basket. You got your big giant, you know, your big giant candy bars in there. Maybe put a little red bow. Maybe get like one of them little light up pencils, you know, put some stuff in there. And then just, you know, you make it fun for the kids by questioning their liberty and, you know, asking if your mom and dad got a CHL. I did have one kid that came back one year and was like, yeah, and the mom and dad brought him back and they both got their CHL. So I literally hooked him up. Like, he got the light up pencil. It was like a zombie head and like king size candy bar. I mean, you know, I get some people that are like, Dana, Halloween's very unchristian. I disagree because I have people that come to me and I'm just like, it's like lazy evangelism. I have them and they want what I have, which is candy. And maybe you've got to like answer some questions for me if I'm going to give you the candy that I purchased, because Dana does not do cheap candy. I'm not the cheap candy house. I'm the house that has the fog machine. I have the giant werewolf, which you're going to see. I really wanted it up all week, but Chris says that that's too much. Is it, though? Because I'm really thinking I'm going to dye his fur green and turn him into the Grinch for Christmas. I'm going to leave that thing up on my porch. It'll be like the Christmas Grinch. Totally same thing. But we have all of that stuff. It's a great, you got people coming, you know, to your door. You can maybe slip a pocket constitution, like what Hillsdale was going out, segue. What Hillsdale was, you know, giving out. You know, give them out one of them pocket constitutions, right? They've been trying to get them in the hands of a million people. Oh, my gosh. Halloween, people coming up, trick or treat. Oh, my goodness. Do you guys know what natural rights are? What's the right? And then we're the fun house. Oh, you don't want to have fun? You just want, you know, trick or treat. Oh, here's your candy. You don't want to participate and turn it into a civics lesson? That's a bummer. A bummer. So anyway, that's how we do it. That's how we approach it. That is really sweet, though. It's still given the candy corn. Do you want more? You want me to throw more? Did you lose that other kernel? Because that's how we get ants.
I don't know.
That's...
You chucked it.
I didn't chuck it. I threw it. I have a strong arm. Like,
right at my eyeball.
You, like, caught it 5 seconds after it flew past your face.
I swear.
It's official. It is official. All right, so... And Lorraine agrees with you. So two communists there. That's okay. It's all right, Lorraine.
What?
It's all right. What?
That is slander and libel or something.
It's not either any of those things.
Some legal thing there that you're breaking.
One last quick thing. I'm going to stop talking about the candy corn. My only thing is that sometimes you get ones that look like this. Now, what happened in quality control right here? What happened with the quality control to get that?
Oh.
It looks like it was ripped out of a witch's mouth.
Right.
It bothers me. I'm going to eat it anyway. Because it's good. I'm going to collapse after this. You know this. I'm going to get real hyped up, and then I'm just going to fall on the floor like Beavis. Candy has the same effect on me. It's horrible. All right, we got Florida Man on the way. Oh, my gosh, this is so sweet. I think I just got diabetes right now. Oh, my gosh. Woo!
I told you.
I'm going to turn into Beavis for sure. I don't even know where my things are. Please tell me. Do we have Hillsdale right now?
No, no, no. We have Caltech.
Oh, they'll appreciate this. Yeah, all right. Caltech. So Caltech. You know what? We need to. I'm just thinking maybe I asked my friend Chad if he could make like a candy corn shooting gun where you just fire candy corn. Like, oh, and so yeah, next time I don't have to throw it at you next year. I can just, you know, pop, pop, right? Pop, get you some candy corn.
More ants.
Yeah. All the ants. Yay.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's try the guy who tried to have a failed carjacking at Starbucks. Starbucks, as it is. This is Fox 35 Orlando, whose website is slower than snails. A Florida man who was released from prison was arrested after he broke into a woman's home, stole her car, crashed it, and then tried to carjack another woman at a Starbucks drive-thru. The crime spree began in the early morning hours of October 24. 39-year-old Michael Prouty, he tried to rob a 7-Eleven, then he broke into a woman's home in the Villages, although he's not a villager, broke into her home in the Villages, stole her purse, her cell phone, her car. Then he was driving the stolen car. Crashed into multiple cars. He was running from the cops, all this. Dash cam video, like they were following him, and he tried to carjack a chick in the Starbucks drive-thru, like while they were following him. Not the sharpest tool in the shed. So he, there was another man that jumped out of the passenger side of another car and was fighting with him. But anyway, he got sent to, he was in prison prior. Now he's going to go back. So he's going to be in for a while because he was already out on probation and he had served 6 years prior. So, man alive. Just not, like I said, not the sharpest tool in the shed. Also, two Florida dudes got into a fight over beer. And one guy, we had a story of yesterday of a machete. Now we have a guy who has a hatchet and he got mad over a spilled beer. This was in Pensacola. He hit his acquaintance with a hatchet several times during the argument over the beer, according to Escambia County Sheriff's Office. His name sounds like what it I think it would make. Danny Tharp, right? In a way, sounds like you're going to hit somebody. He was arrested, charged with attempted homicide. He has a really interesting mullet. He's like got it real short on the top, and then it's just wild and curly at the bottom. Like, it is all party in the back, a.k.a. the Camaro crash helmet, a.k.a. the Kentucky waterfall, a.k.a. the Missouri Compromise. It's the mullet. And they said, yes, he had no regard for human life, blah, blah, blah. That he just nuts. I mean, who gets mad and hits your friend with a hatchet? Danny Tharp. Danny Tharp does. That's what happens. Let's see. I can't talk about this one. No, not going to do that. And not this one. So they're going to have a Florida Man Games, WFLA. And do you know what one of the features is going to be, Kane, of the competition?
Oh, boy, I can guess probably.
Well, it is the first Florida Man Games, and they're going to have an evading arrest obstacle course.
That sounds right.
Mm-hmm. They say it's going to be the most insane athletic showdown on earth. And the contest is going to be this coming February in St. Augustine, Florida. And the evading arrest obstacle course will feature contestants jumping over fences and through yards while being chased by real police officers. The Cat 5 cash grab, where they tried to grab money in a wind-blowing booth, and the self-explanatory beer belly wrestling. Yeah. So you're going to have to be, I'm curious, though, as to the police that they're going to have participating in that. Like, how athletic you have to be depends on how athletic they are.
Right.
You know, so it's not going to be fair if they got, like, the youngest people just fresh out the academy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not, I don't know. I'm just saying. Is it going to be, like, real, you know, like, how is this going to work out? I'm curious. Let's see. This, we got the, oh, no, I'm not doing this one either. Not doing this one. People need to stop doing inappropriate things in stores. But I will say that a Florida man jumped into an Epcot Lagoon on a $6,000 dare and now faces a lifetime ban from all the Disney properties because you can't jump into the lagoon. Like, that's, they don't allow that. By the way, did you also remember the story of the family? Like, didn't one of them get eaten by a gator?
Oh, yeah.
At like a Florida, at a Disney property? Why would you jump into where you know the gators are? We have third hour on the way as we go through the remaining hour of the show this Friday. We'll get y'all set up for the weekend. Stick with us.
He was institutionalized. He would not have been able to commit this offense 100%. I mean, that goes without saying. If somebody's back on the street, then they can always hurt somebody. And it doesn't mean that you just have, you know, it's not like it'd be what you take one firearm, like they can't get others or they can't use other things to be able to harm people. When people are this, I mean, they can do a lot of damage, especially someone like that has military training.
So that is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And in that same interview, he also talked about red flag law, which we'll touch on. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour. Dana Lash here with you. That's kind of the big question with this. The institute, whether or not this guy was involuntarily committed, as was being reported. And I don't like the dodge that I hear from authorities when they say they can't divulge that. Or the excuse that I hear from some that, well, it could be a violation of HIPAA. When you put it out to the press that the guy was already committed for 2 weeks, it doesn't make any sense. Which is it? So again, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Listen coast to coast. Stream the radio program as well. Watch the simulcast YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. There's still so much we don't know. This guy's legit on the loose. Nobody knows where he is. Police have no clue where he is. No idea. And I was looking at some of the latest with it. They went to his house last night, and as it turned out, he wasn't there. They sent in, I think they were going to go try to go into the house and or check the woods and all of that area. And they just, he hasn't at all popped up. They don't know if him taking the boat was like supposed to be some sort of red herring for police. They just don't know. What we do know is that the bowling alley, per John Lott, the just-in-time bowling alley, was a gun-free zone. The bar and grill likely also was. One of the things that they have when you carry, and they have this in Maine as well, and I don't know what the percentage is, what their state has mandated, but you know, if you're a licensed establishment, you're serving alcohol, you can't, I mean, you can, they say that you can drink, but you can't actually reasonably have any alcohol and still be able to carry. So a lot of, but yet a lot of these establishments, there's not really security there. Sometimes if my husband and I are out at establishments, one of us is the designated carrier just because you don't know. I mean, and people, you just have no idea. And, but that that's a whole other discussion, but at least the bowling alley was definitely a gun-free zone. They had signage up. So we do know that much. Now I'm just stating what is known, but the whole story is wild to me that we still have no clue where this guy is. Like, they had an alert that they put out on the Canadian border. They've been looking all over Maine. His vehicle was found at a boat launch. That could have been, again, a red herring. They don't know. His car by the ramp. Divers are going to search the water in case he committed suicide. They don't know. The family was saying, though, they had reported that the guy's mental health had really significantly deteriorated in the past year. And as we talked about in depth earlier in the program, you know, we just don't know if there had been any kind of involvement or intervention. I mean, with New York, Safe Act comes into play when he was committed in New York, and that was just in July of this year. That's just a few months ago. So then he's back in Maine. I don't know if there was an adjudication process and if his terms of release, if the condition of his release included ongoing mental health treatment. His family said that he was that with his mental health, because he was hearing voices. He got new hearing aids, and he said that he was hearing voices and all of this other stuff. And they were saying that he was like schizophrenic. But in looking at schizophrenia, and again, I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm obviously just reading what's been published. Don't people usually develop symptoms before age 40? So this would be a little bit late if he was. I'm not saying that he wasn't. I'm just saying it seems a little bit not in keeping with when people are developing symptoms. There's just a lot of there's a lot of questions from all of this. And I don't like the interview with the neighbor. They had one interview with the neighbor. It was this younger dude who clearly is a super leftist and hates guns, because they were like, yeah, the family shot guns all the time. They lived out in rural Maine, you jackass. What do you think people are going to do? Oh, they shot guns all the time. And he said that at one time he saw him with a deer covered in blood on the back of his truck. Oh, my gosh. Where do you think your food comes from? The fairy factory, like, for crying out loud. A lot of questions. So, I don't know. I mean, apparently the family was aware. They were aware that something was up. At some point, as I said, somebody dropped the ball here. And I think when there's not a lot of transparency, it definitely doesn't do a lot to alleviate that suspicion in people's minds, to clear up or clarify these questions that people have. Definitely doesn't help. So we'll see. There's just so much that we don't know. I wrote a piece about this. I sent it out to you on Substack. There's some good stuff up there all this week that's gone out. So if you make sure, this is why you need to make sure you get the newsletter. But I don't want this story to kind of go away, because everybody talks about, oh, we have to do something, we need more gun laws. But there's not any law that you're going to pass. We talked about the yellow flag laws for Maine and the red flag law. I mean, he apparently was involuntarily committed. Was it not reported to NCIC because you're supposed to? Was there an adjudication process? Was he taking anything? And if he was held involuntarily in New York, again, per SAFE Act, they're supposed to notify the Division of Criminal Justice Services so they could pull the guy's permit, and then they follow up. It's a requirement that they go, and then they seize your firearms. That's New York SAFE Act. The rifle that he's holding in the photo, the timeline of when he got the rifle, I think is important, because I don't see how he could have gotten that rifle in New York, because it has a detachable magazine. That's not New York SAFE compliant. He would not be able to legally have that rifle in New York. So where did he purchase it? How, if he got it, did he have it before he was committed? Did he get it after he was committed? How did he purchase it after he was committed? Because unless he had a restoration of rights, I don't see how he was still a prohibited possessor due to involuntary commitment. How was he able to purchase that? There's so many questions here. And we need to know this stuff. But I will tell you, there were a lot of people who watched what happened to Israel on October 7th, and they've been seeing stories of Jewish families attacked here. And then now they see this monster murder people in a manner that Hamas would absolutely love to do. And they are sure as hell grateful for their Second Amendment right of self-defense. So there's just too many questions. And as far as the mental health thing, you know, one of the reasons that I get so aggravated at Democrats over this is because they don't care about mental health enough to actually discuss the nuance of it. You know, by and large, people who deal with mental health instability are more of a danger to themselves, never to anybody else. I mean, that's usually the thing. They're more of a danger to themselves and not other people. That's why these instances of mass casualty situations where people are dealing with, or maybe they're just evil, or maybe they do have a mental illness, they're so incredibly rare, because that's kind of unusual for them to be, you know, want to hurt so many people. But you can't have an honest discussion about it, because Democrats don't know how to talk about it without stereotyping every single person. Like, a mother who has postpartum depression is not going to go out and do something like this. A veteran who's dealing with just, and PTSD does not mean that you're going to go out and hurt a bunch of people. Like I said, it's usually people who are meanest to themselves. And it stigmatizes mental health, and it makes it to where people are discouraged from seeking treatment. They do such a disservice to this, because they mention it kind of in passing, but they want to talk about banning guns. And the way that they talk about gun owners makes it sound like, just by nature of legally owning a piece of property and being a lawful owner of said property, that's somehow just enough to make someone suspicious, which is asinine to me. None of these people that are talking about gun control are serious about saving lives. Not a single person. Just like the people who say that there should be a ceasefire, and they say nothing about the hostages being held. They don't care anything about lives in Gaza. Give me a break. It's all about an agenda. Now, I told you earlier, I wanted to come back to this story that I put it up. I had it up on social media. If you follow me on Instagram, I think, and I have written about it before. I've sent it before to newsletter subscribers. But the story that I mentioned on Jesse Waters' program last night, this is one of the other reasons why we can't have an honest discussion. You heard so long people say, no, the CDC is barred from studying the gun epidemic and all this stuff. No, they're not. They were barred from promoting gun control, either for or against firearm ownership. That's what the law says. And gun control advocates were livid because they want to use your tax dollars to promote gun control. And they actually are, when you think about it. They found a way to get around this. Last year, California Rifle and Pistol Association, one of their attorneys, noticed that the CDC had edited its website's references to defensive gun usage, which vastly outweighs criminal usage. So you can't talk about criminal use as a way to deny rights without talking about lawful usage as a way to restore them and maintain them. So Costas Moros, who's been on the program before, he saw that they were editing their website and removing all the defensive gun usage statistics. And so the CDC had cited these estimates from, you know, a number of surveys, you know, before. And so he thought, that's kind of interesting. So he filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the CDC, and he asked for any and all documentation and communications relating to the decision to change their website. And 6 months after he FOIA'd for this information, he got a ton of emails. And a lot of it was redacted, but it showed how they were actually working with anti-gun groups to edit what the CDC reports on, to edit what the CDC includes on its website, and it was all related to defensive gun usage. Gun control advocates were livid, and their emails and screenshots that show this, they were livid that, and over at the Reload, they posted, Costa shared some of these emails. They were mad that the CDC was reporting on this because they said it makes it harder for them to push gun control. They literally told the CDC, you sharing defensive gun usage is undermining our anti-gun advocacy. Take it off your website. And the CDC did. This is the most one of the most underreported stories. Actually, I think it's the most underreported story from last year. Absolutely. None of these people are serious about saving lives.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, let's see. I don't want to read this headline. Nope. Wait. Okay. It's Friday. This is all your fault. Western Washington man is accused of trying to hire a prostitute for his... What? Like another horse? Prostitute, right? For his horse?
No.
It's a miniature horse.
Right.
His name is Jad. And he was booked into the... This is not real. Is this real?
I think it's real.
But wait a minute.
Yes.
Like, are we talking about like a nut, like a skanky mini horse?
Oh yeah, no.
Yes. Like a slutty horse?
I guess. Yeah, the guy himself is more slutty, I guess, than the horse.
I just let's move on because there's, you know, I know humans do messed up things sometimes.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I need to know.
Yeah.
I don't need to know everything.
Good call.
Yeah. So a Starbucks that was being built in an unwelcoming town burnt down for a second time. At some point, you just think that it's not wanted. So in New Mexico, they're investigating a case of suspected arson. A fire erupted at a Starbucks construction site for literally the second time in less than 2 months. The fire chief said, yeah, it's pretty scary. Is it just because they over-roasted their beans there and that's what happened? Like, I'm curious. Oh, I'm not making light of arson. Don't send me hate mail because I'll just print it out and make fun of you. So don't. A woman was jailed after touching a city parking meter. Jade Joinson?
Yeah.
Was banned from touching park... What? Touching... This is in Britain, so go figure. It's in Liverpool. She was banned from touching parking meters across Merseyside. The woman was banned from touching parking meters after she was caught engaging with a machine in the city centre. They said that they banned her from touching Liverpool Council city parking meters. She was convicted of attempting to steal money from such a meter just a couple of months ago. And so now they told her she can no longer touch them. It's an offence if she touches them. If she looks at them, it's okay, but she's not allowed to touch. No touch. That does it, yeah. I mean, who does that? How do you enforce that? Are you touching it? No. Like, if she's right by it.
They have cameras just everywhere for
like that. What if she's just literally a millimeter away from it? Like that. Just like right next to it. Not touching it. Not touching it. I mean, anybody who's grown up with siblings or cousins is an expert at that. Like, you are an expert at maintaining the space between your hands and an object. So I just feel like that's, how do they enforce that, right? I've got a lot of questions. I've got some questions. An Amazon driver stomped on a box shortly after a delivery to a Santa Fe Springs home. Sometimes I get questions about package deliveries, right? Doorbell video captured the driver stomping. I guess he didn't like the package. So JP Sears, who is one of the most passive aggressive people that has ever been created and put on earth, joins us next. Stick with us.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, bottom of this third hour. And as always, you can listen coast to coast around the country. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program as well, where we talk and also look at the camera at the same time. And you can catch that, Channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook, all good things. So I'm glad that this next person is on earth. He's one of the most passive-aggressive, sarcastic people I think I've ever seen in my life. And when I first started watching his videos, you didn't know whether or not he was serious at first. And then it like started, the realization creeped up on you that I think he thinks like us. I think because he was just so consistent and never broke anything. I mean, he was just very in character, and it's good stuff. But JP Sears has a frillion 110,000 videos online where he is a one man in living color show, and he hits everything. I was just watching one of his videos where he was talking about if the alphabet people took over government, and I could not stop watching the hand of the purple haired person that he was being, because it was a kitten puppet as a glove. And I couldn't get past it. But he's got a book out, and I have it here, actually. It's a prop, too. Chomp, 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 The Snapfast Challenge, and it's with Brave Books. And JP joins us now via Skype, also from the Great Republic of Texas. JP, it's good to meet you finally. Welcome.
Dana, thank you for having me on. It's great to meet you.
Of course. So I have to ask you, because you have your background in comedy. And I like your approach to these issues, because nothing that I feel like the way that you approach it, nothing could ever actually be construed as being malicious to people. It's just hysterical. Tell me about, like, I don't think you ever really always did. I don't know if it's maybe a political angle or a current event angle, but when did that kind of kick off and you started focusing more on that?
Yeah, I used to, you know, there was no politics in my comedy, and I wasn't interested in politics whatsoever. But what changed that, you know, now I like to use my comedy to stand up for freedom, and freedom's weirdly become a political issue in the United States of America.
Odd.
So that started spring of 2020. You know, they launched the whole COVID lockdown kind of thing. And first time in my lifetime, I was seeing freedoms in America be eroded away. And I know a little bit about history, so I realized like where these patterns of freedom erosion could go if we allow it. So just following the natural instincts of my heart, I started using my comedy content as a way to stand for freedom and using the sword of satire to help slice through the psychological scar tissue of the propaganda, lies, hypocrisy, and corruption to hopefully let the light of truth shine free. And most of all, hopefully get people to do a little bit more of their own thinking.
Yeah. And I think you've been very successful at that. We're talking with our friend J.P. Sears, who has a new, it's a children's book out. It's about peer pressure, Chomp, 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 the Snap Fast Challenge. Right, you were using comedy to make that message right as comedy was, a lot of people wondered if comedy was dying because everybody is so offended. I think people find a power in being offended over everything. So has that time passed? Has the pendulum swung? Can things be funny again?
Yeah, by the way, the things, they always could have been funny. It's just a matter of, do people silence themselves? Do the comedians succumb to the fear of cancel culture? And I can't say the true thing because it might offend someone. I think it's bouncing back, though. You know, we always were allowed to laugh, and nobody can take our right to laugh away. So it was always there. By the way, when there is a drought of comedy about what's going on in the world, people become hungrier for it. They appreciate it more. It's pretty beautiful. And you know, personally, I think it seems like we've reached the point of peak offendedness because it's gotten so ridiculous, so absurd. We have a lot of work to do, but it seems like the pendulum is swinging back. And you mentioned people get a sense of power from being offended, and that's what they've done. And we have a culture of people who have been trained to be victims and get a sense of power, but that's artificially flavored power. It's actually disempowering, but they just believe, oh, this empowering thing I'm doing, this is empowering for me. So I think people we've not only seen so many ridiculous examples of people being offended and, you know, self-victimized in culture that we see how ridiculous it is, but also people have tried it enough that they've had enough experience to realize it doesn't work. I don't feel empowered. I don't feel happier. I'm not living a better life because I figure out creative ways to get offended about anything. So I think we're swinging back in a good direction.
Because half the time I can't tell anymore if what I'm looking at is like a real article of news or if it's satire because everything is so dumb. Like, for instance, I've got to bring this up with you because you and I are very like-minded on, I mean, some people might say vaccines, I say clot shots. I mean, you know, it's kind of all, you know, I mean, one side or the other. But it's like they feel as though, I guess, that the vaccine was so successful that now they're trying to figure out, what else can they make vaccines for? And I, hands to sky, it's an actual real story. So in Brazil, and we just talked about this in our headline segment, they're developing a new vaccine, JP, for cocaine addiction. Now, I would just think that it would be to not do it. But no, there's going to be a vaccine for everything now. And I feel like we're going to start seeing this for a multitude of different things. If you have something that you're doing that you should maybe correct or not do, there's a vaccine for that. I just kind of wanted to get your take on it.
Man, it's part of the, what I would call, it's an agenda, intentional or not. I think it's intentional to weaken people. So instead of using your self-responsibility, let's get you to rely on this product. This is the way you can be happy or healthy or accomplish what you want. You need to depend on this thing outside of yourself that comes from criminal organizations, our pharmaceutical companies. But to your point, like one way to overcome a cocaine addiction is to not do it. Like, that's easier said than done. Right. But absolutely. So, and then, you know, these weight loss shots, it's like, well, you know, like also exercise and eating clean foods can do that. So to me, this cocaine vaccine, which is hilarious, by the way, it absolutely looks like it's a predictable part of the pattern of teaching people to be weak. And the way you get people to be weak is to get them to depend on someone else, which means you teach people to not use the superpower called self-responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you about your book, Chomp, 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 with Brave Books. They do such good stuff. I love the art that Brave, that they do, the illustrations that they have. So this is JP's book, and this is all about peer pressure, which, very timely, considering what we all just went through as a world for like 2.5 years. That was the longest 15 days ever.
That was actually the motivation of it. I mean, I think protecting kids and nurturing kids, that's the most important job to do on the planet. And we all know peer pressure can be a force of nature for kids. And now with social media, it's even more forceful. But you look at the world the last 3 years, and I was just looking at adults and realizing they didn't get the message about peer pressure when they were a kid because they're all succumbing to it. And of course, adults succumbing to peer pressure, what we've seen, you know, we call that obedience and compliance, where people are betraying their own thinking. They're betraying their own heart, and they're exercising cowardice to conform rather than courage in order to stand for what's true to them. So kids need these messages because we see so much kids programming, yeah, shows, Hollywood, Disney, public schools, engineered to, what I think, weaken kids, teach them to betray their thinking, reward them for going along with the herd, and intimidate them and punish them for actually being a free-thinking individual. So I wanted to illustrate the consequences of succumbing to peer pressure, but also with the redemption in this story, illustrate the reward of exercising courage to do your own thinking and being true to yourself.
I love that. J.P. Sears, the book is Chomp, 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 The Snap Fast Challenge. And people can also find you on awakenwithjp.com. And I suggest you go and watch all of his videos because they are hysterical. Do you have like a whole costume area? Like you have like so many wigs and props.
Dude, I have, my father would be ashamed of me if he came into my prop closet like, J.P., what? That's a lot of women's wigs and women's bathing suits. So, yeah, I have got too much space dedicated to that.
Well, I keep doing what you're doing because it's funny. And I think we need some of that, especially with this, the ridiculousness of everything today. I mean, you kind of have to bring absurdity to laugh at the absurdity. So thanks for that. J.P. Sears, Awaken with J.P. Good to talk with you. Love to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you, Dana. I'd love to. Great to see you.
You too. Take care. We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this third hour of our broadcast. We made it to Friday. Yeah. We did. And Kane only had one piece of candy corn.
It's true.
You know what? I didn't bring this up while JP was on because he's like super healthy. Right. And this is probably not like his jam. So yeah, we're just going to keep that over
really
here.
Sweet.
Juan, right. You'll just cut that part out of this whole segment and not put it in there. So anyway, I'm actually violating my own healthy eating principles by even having it here. I've had 3 pieces this year, so 3 whole pieces.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Point blank, though, do you think that red flag laws are effective generally?
I don't think there's been data to suggest the red flag laws have been effective. I mean,
even in Florida,
I don't think. I mean, I think it's anecdotal when people say this or that. But I think what's ultimately effective is holding people accountable either through mental adjudication if they're crazy or convicting them when they're committing crimes. I mean, a lot of the people that commit crimes. I mean, obviously, a shooting like this, catastrophic, a lot of people. The typical crimes that are being committed where one or two people may get killed, they don't get as much press, but it's almost always somebody who's been in the justice system multiple times, and then they finally commit a really serious offense. So identify.
Good for him for saying that. Welcome back to the program, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. He's right, by the way. We made it to Friday. I really wish you could have heard all the hell that broke loose on break. Because Kane does not know his Mr. Rogers puppet's names. Not only does he hate candy corn.
It's an embarrassing day for me.
But
sorry.
Meow, meow, that's right, meow.
Don't be mean, meow, meow.
Why do you hate candy, meow, meow, corn, communist, meow? So I don't know what's happening. This is what we ate candy corn, and
it's been a rough week.
We're tweaking out right now. Blinking, I'm freaking out. All right, so... I have like a million things that I kind of wanted to play all at the same time. One of those included Scotland's first minister, Humza Yousaf, who was bitching that there's a lot of white people in Scotland. Like, that's a thing that he was saying. He, in fact, do we have some of this to grab? I think I dropped it in Slack.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just play us a couple notes of this rant.
White. The Lord Justice Clerk, white. Every High Court judge, white. The Lord Advocate, white. The Solicitor General, white. The Chief Constable, white. Every deputy chief constable, white.
You know what percentage of Scotland white. Is white, Kane? 96%.
Ooh, that seems hefty.
96% of Scotland is white. So is it shocking that a lot of people serving in government are white? Oh, he's not.
Right.
So what is his? He sounds like a racist.
He's that 6% or 4% or whatever it's left over.
Yeah, he sounds like a total racist. And it's, I mean, he is what now the, he's the first minister of Scotland, which is like their prime minister. So, and that was after Sturgeon had to resign. And she was a tyrant during the Rona. Sounds like this guy is too. I mean, why is he so obsessed? He's oh, it's white. They're white. Well, yeah, 96% of Scotland is white. Are you shocked? That's, you know, good heavens. It's like going to Japan and going, why are there so many Japanese people here? So crazy. Or going to China. Why are there so many Chinese people here? So weird. Or going anywhere in the South Pacific, going to Hawaii. Or why are there so many Polynesian people here? This is so weird. Are, really? Like, people have to ask stupid questions like this? Golly. This guy's a meow meow. Jackass meow. Just saying. Or going to Saudi Arabia. Why are there so many Arabs here in Saudi Arabia? I'm just so shocked about this. Did you see this? There's not a lot. It's not a lot of diversity here. This guy. His parents are from Pakistan. Has he tried that in Pakistan? Why are there so many Pakistanis here? So weird. Where the hell come from? You're in Scotland. 96% of it's white. Why are you freaking out that there's a lot of white people? That means that there's probably going to be more white people than there are people who are not white in elected offices. Except for you, dude, who's complaining about it, even though you're the first, literally the first minister. The irony. He's too busy complaining about white people to notice the irony of all of this. Apparently, we all have to watch South Park because they just beat the ever-loving ridiculousness out of Disney.
I saw a little trailer. It is pretty funny.
Oh yeah, I can't. So I'm going to be watching that. I'm going to be watching it over the weekend. All right, Kane, today's stupidity.
All right, Juan, if you can pull up Jamal Bowman's video of him pulling that fire alarm, if you haven't seen it, you can check it out now. As you hear Hakeem Jeffries respond to a question about Jamal Bowman's
take
behavior,
the and there goes the alarm.
Listen to this.
This morning, I'm curious, there's a censure resolution that's been introduced against him. Is what he's done and admitted to in court worthy of censure?
Not in my view.
Oh, but he lied to you, and then he totally ripped those signs off the wall, off the door.
Yeah, and he lied to
police.
And then
pulled the alarm. He tried to, it's an insurrection. I was told that was an insurrection. Yeah. That's a meow meow insurrection meow. According to Henrietta Pussycat, that's how she'd say it. All right, folks, have a wonderful weekend and happy anniversary to my husband tomorrow. I know. We're getting old. Be back Monday.